There's an old leadership book, it is by John Maxwell, great leadership author. And somebody had asked him the question and said, can you tell me what it is that you think about business ethics? And John pauses and he said, there is no such thing as business ethics. There's just ethics, right? You either have them or you don't.
Welcome back, everyone, to another exciting episode of Mind Gravity Podcast. Today on the show, I have a really special guest, Jeremy Hill. He is the founder and managing director of JB Capital. He started JB Capital back in 2003. By no means was his path to starting JB Capital was linear, and his entire journey up till now has been riddled with some amazing stories and insights for all budding entrepreneurs and hustlers. What is JB Capital? Well, it is a direct private lender providing responsive creative capital solutions to privately held middle market companies and small corporate borrowers. They make non-controlled credit investments in select companies with strong business models with compelling value propositions led by experienced management teams. Well, if not for the company itself, you'll definitely find some amazing insights from Jeremy's own experiences on his entrepreneurship journey. So without any further ado, let's tune in with my conversation with Jeremy Hill. Jeremy, welcome to the Mind Gravity Podcast.
Rohan, I'm excited. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Yeah, it's a strange times, but each of us are doing our best to get through it. There's a lot of interesting stuff when we lost our space, just getting to know you better. And I want to continue learning more on various aspects about your life, your startup entrepreneurship journey, your backstory. But to give a quick start, let's start with what's JB Capital?
So Jeremy Hill, so I've got a company called JB Capital headquartered outside of the Seattle area. And so we are a direct private lender. So we operate like a private version of a commercial bank, and we provide all sorts of different types of capital and investment structures up and down the capital stack throughout, companies that are doing exciting things throughout the country.
And how does that differ from your typical commercial banks or private investors or other investment vehicles?
Well, we're not nearly as boring as the normal commercial banks, right? So I think, for us, most people are familiar with, normal head over tackle commercial banks, and they've probably heard of venture capital or private equity and may or may not know the difference. I think for, a lot of your audience that's, maybe based out of the Valley, this is, everyday, normal words, right? But the typical commercial banks are normally viewed as hyper risk adverse, right? Is that they have a little small banker's box that they, invest in and loan in, and they're famous for their, the five C's of character, capacity, capital, conditions, and collateral, which, puts us all to sleep, right? And so my favorite saying about the banking world and the traditional banker world, especially for entrepreneurs and guys like you and me, is that banks are famous for giving you an umbrella when it's sunny and taking it back when it's raining, right? We've all heard that and we laugh about it, but it couldn't be more true, especially in the times it is that we're going through right now, right? Is that they're great at loaning money to people who don't need it. And now in the times it is to where Rohan and Jeremy's software business or whatever it is that we do is actually needing capital, they're not prepared to talk to you, right? And so traditional private equity is just kind of what it says. They're true equity investors, it is, that are either buying entire companies or portions of companies, and they're looking over a period of time, it is, to try to add value to those companies and then ultimately monetize the value of that company, whatever, at some period of time later through either a public offering or selling it to another private equity firm or somebody else. And then venture capital, they're typically a little bit more earlier stage investors. So they're taking a little bit higher risk, expecting a little bit higher return. And there's a lot of good guys there, but there's a lot of guys in that business that have the well-earned reputation of a vulture capitalist, right? And so for us as JB Capital, we're meant to really be a bit of a blend, right? So I'm probably more akin to a traditional bank, but I'm a hell of a lot more flexible. And so our solutions really for capital are meant to be creative and impactful and catalytic into the efforts of what the business is doing. So we're trying to help companies be able to get access to capital that moves them from A to B. without a lot of the restrictions it is that a normal bank would put on you. And so we'll invest anywhere up and down the capital stack from, you know, a senior secured loan to a mezz piece to a preferred piece to a unitranche piece, which means it is that we'll provide different stages of capital. We don't do equity. So I'll invest anywhere up and down the stack except for equity. And so the goal here for us is to be able to provide creative capital to bring in some thought leadership. It is similar to private equity, to where we're adding value along the way. And then just to be that, you know, good, thoughtful, insightful, you know, big brother or uncle or best friend it is that's helping you kind of move your business forward and providing you capital to do so. So that's our world.
Got it. So would it be fair to say it lies between the VC world and the typical banking world? That's where you position yourself, or that's the rest you have identified?
Yeah, because I mean, we add value like a private equity investor, right? So I'm not just, you know, I mean, ultimately and fundamentally our business is renting money, right? I'm loaning you money, I want it back at some period of time, right? But dissimilar to a bank, we are definitely taking a more private equity approach to loaning money, to where it is that during the tenure of our loan, whether it's a year or two or three or four, we're trying to see what other value it is that we can bring that company outside of just bringing them a checkbook, right? And I think that a lot of guys in the credit space are missing that, right? Like, I'm going to loan $5 million to ABC company and I want it back in 2 years and hopefully you guys don't screw it up along the process. But it's not a, for us, we mandated is that our companies, we have a talk with them, we have a call scheduled with them every 2 weeks, and then we meet with them face-to-face once a month, no matter where they are in the country. So for us as lenders and for our investors, there is never a surprise at the end of the month or at the end of the quarter that, you know, your kid didn't make the football team and you didn't meet your quarterly numbers, right? Like, we want to make a difference beyond just loaning you some money.
Gotcha. So a couple of questions pop up right off the bat. One, you know, there's a typical notion, like for a VC, it's high risk, high capital, and, you know, but as far as the governance of the companies is concerned, the founders and the employees, the early employees kind of have a lot of decision-making power. But the private equity side or leveraged buyout, you know, space, the notion is that the investors or people who lend out money typically go in and serve companies or small businesses that are not operating at its full efficiency. And they go in and make about the operational changes, make them more sound so that they can eventually flip it around or sell it or acquire whatever the case may be. Is that the kind of approach you take? And if so, is there a specific industry or verticals that you target? What does JP Capital specialize in?
Sure. So two parts to that question. So first, I think my understanding of what it is that you're talking about is more of a leverage buyout structure. And so leverage buyout structure would typically work akin to more of a private equity approach, right? And so you and I, right? Two wise guys, private equity firm, whatever the name of the business is, right? Will come in, try to look at either buying control or the totality of the company. They'll lever in by using a certain degree or, you know, too much debt in coming in and taking control of the company, levering in, try to get that and then make operational changes. It is either through management, debt structure, you know, cutting costs one thing or another to increase the value of that and then basically flip. So think about it like Rohan and Jeremy are going to go flip houses. We're going to go in and buy something undervalued, put in new cabinets, new paint, new carpet, all that other kind of stuff, heighten the value and then flip it and sell it. That's almost a private equity approach to, you know, or a leverage buyout approach it is to, you know, coming in and doing companies that way. I don't do that. Either I'm not smart enough or good looking enough to do that, right? But our approach has really been for those companies that are at an inflection point, right? Is so I believe that there's a tremendous amount of companies throughout the country that are at a point to where it is that a bank can't quite get their arms wrapped around it and traditional private equity can't afford to pay attention to it. And so for those guys, where do you go? You know, and so our job there hopefully is to be a good kind of not only resource for capital, but a source for prudent advice to help them make good decisions to get to the next stage or two of their business. And so for us as JB Capital, we tend to operate like a private version of a commercial bank. So whereas about 75% or so of our overall portfolio is head over tackle normal commercial businesses. So these are software and technology and machine learning companies to specialty food companies and consumer products, specialty manufacturers, and then guys it is that are involved in the healthcare space. That's about 75% of our portfolio. The other 20 to 25% of the portfolio is made up of a real estate security of one kind or another it is that's paying a dividend. And so the ultimate goal for us as managers and what we report to our investors is we're trying to create not only a geographic but an industry diverse, portfolio of assets that's generating cash flow on a monthly basis. So that's how we view the world.
Gotcha. So it's a fairly diversified portfolio. And I think with the way you explain about how it differs from your private equity and leveraged buyout makes a ton of sense. And it sounds like a very complex model to deal with for someone who's not akin to how the space works. So I was just curious to know, you've been in business for about a couple of decades at this point with JB Capital?
Yeah, almost 20 years.
So what got you started to found JB Capital? And I think a better question is, what was journey prior to JB Capital that led up to this?
You know, I think that there's so many people that I think believe that everything has to be figured out, or that you have to have a very, clear paint by numbers, 1, 2, 3, and here's how things are going to be. And a lot of guys have had that journey. That is about the 180 degree opposite for me. So I have always been an entrepreneur. I started my first company when I was 20, which was a little wireless phone business. A friend of mine was new and young and married and drank beer. I was new and young, about to get married, and I also drank beer. And that literally was like the totality of the business plan at the time. So this is the early 90s. Cell phones are going crazy. And we started this little business. And so it was Michael and I, and then it was Michael and I plus two, and then Michael and I plus 20, and then 40, and 60, and 80. And we just became this unconsciously cool little, what they called a master agent at the time, back at, 30 years ago, or however long it was, And there wasn't a plan to go into that business, no more than there was a plan to really form JB Capital. It just kind of became a happy accident.
What were you and Michael doing around that point?
So Michael and I had put together a company called Northwest Wireless at the time, which was a master agent. So basically you were an unemployed sales force for AirTouch, which became Verizon, and for Western Wireless and VoiceStream, which is now kind of, come in and become T-Mobile. We helped launch Nextel up here way back in the day. And so all of these companies, would outsource at the time, basically their sales force. So rather than selling it to your mom at the mall and that kind of thing, like you see the kiosks way back in the day, is that we were setting up corporations. We were setting up, from the Boeing to CFirst, which became B of A, to large commercial contractors that had, a distributed workforce of 500 people and needed to figure out a way to communicate, right? That was our job, to solve those problems and figure that stuff out. And that was cool, because at 20 years old or 21 years old, having a cell phone, right? Like, dude, you were the guy. And then when you had a cell phone and a pager, you were hoping somebody would call you and pay, right? And it was just, it was, all the beer and bullshit you knew what to do with when you were 20 years old, right? And so we ran that for 3 or 4 years, met a bunch of great people, made some money, and loved the entrepreneurial aspect of being able to, really create your own calendar and decide who you wanted to do business with and who not, right? And I loved that aspect of things. My wife and I had been married a few years at the time, and we're getting ready to have children, or talk about having children and think about buying a house and do all those things that real grown-ups do, And, we had a pause moment one night to where it was like, if we're going to have kids, we should have insurance. That'd be a good idea. Like health insurance for having a baby. It's a good idea. That'd be an adult decision, right? We should, I should probably, maybe buy some dress clothes and get some suits and ties. I've always liked that. I want to get one of those little cards that attach to my belt with a name on it that buzzes me into the building. You know what I should do? I should get a job. Job would be good. Responsible people have jobs. And so I sold my interest to my partner at the time, and I went and got a job. And then about 2 weeks later, I got fired from that job. And then so over the next probably 2.5 years or so, I think I went through 13 jobs. And so in my efforts to try to become a responsible, human being amongst society and wear a tie and have health insurance and do all this kind of stuff, I realized I'm a really shitty employee. you know, and my wife and I had a bunch of heart-to-hearts at the time to where it is that it was like, we got to do something different. Like, you're bad at this, right? Like, you need to do something different. And so this now gets us to a point to where it is that we're early 2000s, the real estate business was going crazy. And so it was, I'm sure in San Francisco, the same way across the country, real estate business was going crazy. You didn't have to be that smart or that good looking to make money in the real estate business, which coincidentally are my two qualifications, right? Not that smart, not that good looking. And we got into the business. We started looking at the HGTV, let's go flip a house and let's, you know, do whatever, right? Get in the mortgage business, get in the real estate business, one thing or another, as everybody did. And we decided to get in the real estate business. And so I went and got my real estate license. I'd grown up, my family, parents and grandparents had been in the construction business and architecture business. And so I'd been on 1,000 job sites as a kid and just loved seeing things come together. And so went, tested, got my real estate license. I spent about 6 months in the real estate business. At the time there was 25,000 real estate agents in the state of Washington, and now there's 25,001, and everybody's smarter than the guy down the street. And I have a bunch of friends that have been very successful in that business. For me, in my world, I thought this is a stupid business. There's 25,000 people in the same business in the same area saying that they're smarter than the guy up the street. And I don't want to do that. That this isn't it. Right. And so, I had gone out and had done a bunch of work and been pretty successful in 6 months, right? But I'd done a bunch of work, but I'd met a tremendous amount of connections with people and had connections from people that is before, and was out one day at his interviewing a builder. I'd heard good things about the guy. I'm sitting down in his office and we're getting to know him. I sat down and said, hey, you know, Jeff, you know, here's what it is that we're doing, and tell me about your business and what are you doing, and so on and so forth. And so we're getting to know each other, and he says, well, you know, this project it is we have coming up over here, I think I'm actually going to list with so-and-so. And I said, okay, that's great. You know, I've heard good things about them. I think they'll do you a good job. I'm not really interested in listing your business. And he kind of paused and he's like, you're not? Well, no. Well, what are you here for? Right. And I'm like, well, I'd heard great things about you. You got a good business, good reputation. I love meeting, you know, good people that are doing great things. I just wanted to get to know you and your business.
Right.
And all of a sudden the guy's demeanor just totally changed, because now he wasn't being pitched. He was just being talked to. Now we're just friends.
Right.
And so we start talking and kind of getting to know things. And he's telling me about his business and how he started and all the things it is that you do. And I said, well, Jeff, tell me, you know, how do you guys like finance all this stuff? Like, where's, you know, are you just like rich, or you have a rich uncle, or where does all this stuff come from? And he's telling me, well, we got this project down the street and it's, you know, whatever it was, $3 million or $4 million at the time. And he said, you know, we got about $1 million of our own that's going into it. The bank's giving me another, you know, million or million and a half. And I got to come up with like, you know, 500 grand. And I said, okay, well, so where does that 500 grand come from? And he goes, well, you know, we call kind of friends and families and, you know, pass the cup and, you know, go try to syndicate the rest of that money. I didn't know what syndicate meant at the time, right? I'm like, oh, okay, well, you know, do you want help with that? And he's like, well, do you think you can help? And I'm like, I don't know. I know a bunch of people. Let me make some calls. We'll see what we can do, right? You know? And so over the next kind of 30, 40 days, I made a bunch of calls for him and I helped the guy raise 500 grand. Didn't charge him anything. Didn't know I was supposed to, right? I was just, hey, he's a good dude. I want to help him. If I can help him, great.
Right.
And so that was fun. About 2 weeks later, I get a call from a builder, another developer, that calls and says, hey, heard it is that you had helped a friend of mine. Can you come in and take a look at what it is that we're doing? I heard you could help us maybe raise some money. Sure. And so I go and I meet with him, and he says, well, hey, you know, I was talking to this guy and he told me it is that you'd help him raise some money. We've got a project it is that we're working on, and you know, it'd be great it is if you could help. And so he goes, here's what we need, and so on and so forth. And, you know, I'm looking for another, you know, $1 million or whatever it was at the time. Okay, great. Do you think, you know, how do you think this is going to work? And I'm like, well, you know, from all of my years of experience, which has been like 10 days now or 2 weeks, right? I think that it should, you know, kind of look like this. This is what I've seen before, and here's what people are asking, and here's how you should tell this story, and so on and so forth. And he goes, okay, well, do you think you can help me do that? Yeah, I think so. Okay, awesome. Well, you know, what do you guys, what do you charge to do this? And I'm like, well, up until now, nothing, you know, right? nothing.
As we go.
Right, exactly. You're just figuring it out as you go. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know what we charge. And so I'm thinking, well, realtors charge 3%. And so I told the guy, well, we charge 3%. You know, so any capital it is that we bring in, we charge 3%. And the guy's like, okay, well, that sounds great. Do you guys have an agreement or something you can send over for us? Sure, man, happy to send it over, you know, right? And so we kind of shake hands and we're talking. He goes, hey, what's the name of the company, by the way?
Right.
Oh, shit. It's JB Capital. Me, right? JB Capital. Yeah, it's JB Capital. And he's like, oh, I've heard of you guys. Sure you have. Of course you have. We're JB Capital, you know? Right. And so we kind of shake hands and I walk out the door and I'm thinking, oh my God, what the hell? And so I get in the car and I get on the phone and I call my attorney and I'm like, hey, I need to start I think I just started a business. And he's like, okay. And so I tell him the story of what's happening and he goes, oh my God. He goes, do you have any idea what you're doing? And I'm like, yeah, kind of. But here's the deal. I need an agreement. Here's what it's got to say, because here's what I told him. And oh, by the way, you need to start a company and it has to be called JB Capital, right? Because that's what I told this guy, right? So that literally was just kind of the dumb luck on how things started, right? Like so many people have a plan that's got to be perfect. And that works for a lot of people. That's certainly not my story. But, you know, since this kind of dumb luck or happenstance or just, you know, whatever, we've had 20 years now almost of coming alongside, you know, entrepreneurs and just trying to help them solve these problems. And the business has grown and manifested. And we've met some of the most incredible people. It is that really all kind of started by a happy accident,
right?
You know?
Yeah, and I think that's a fantastic story for anyone who's aspiring to start their business or actually in the trenches right now. But, you know, listening to your story, I just come to think of it as like hindsight is 2020, but there's obviously a ton of challenges that you face through the process. And one thing that just popped out during that conversation was you obviously tried a bunch of different things prior to JB Capital, right? Sure. And I've noticed this trait being pretty common among entrepreneurs because they're always seen as being high risk takers. Mm-hmm. How important do you think was having that trait of, you know, at a flip of a hat, you're like, all right, I'm going to go in this direction. Because on the other hand, you're also advised that you want to keep your focus and find something and keep going at it. But from your story, it comes across as like you had to have multiple different experimentations for yourself before figuring out what's best for you. So how was that journey like? How important was that journey for you?
Man, that's a great question. You know, there's something candidly to both. I mean, there's something it is that's being singularly focused and committed. I think for me, there had been endeavors to where it is that, you know, my wife and I thought we were going to go down a certain path, or I thought I was going to go down a certain path, or we thought maybe this job is it, or maybe this business over here is it. And, you know, even throughout JB Capital, we've looked at starting different things along the way, right? One of the things that is that I've learned is that sometimes the harder you push, the harder the world pushes back.
Right?
And there's something to allowing things to come, right? Even from just from energy. Like if you and I, you know, we're not doing this over audio, we're sitting close together, right? And if I come up and I push on your shoulder, right? And I start leaning into and pushing on your shoulder, your natural reaction and human energy is to lean into that and kind of push back. Mm-hmm. Right. And so and sometimes, you know, there's martial arts that talk about, you know, the ways it is that you can use other energy it is to move and transition, whether it's Aikido or Judo or one thing or another, right? And the same thing's true in business, right? It's sometimes the harder that I'm pushing on something, trying to make this thing go, and it's just not going. There is a point to where it is that if you step back, it allows things to come to you. And so I think for us, there was several things. For me, you know, the easiest instance was the job front, right, is that I had tried to be a good little boy and go get a job and show up and get a paycheck every 2 weeks and do my best along the way. And when I had jobs, the jobs it is that I had, I always performed. I was always, you know, there early, stayed late, worked my ass off, one thing or another it is, but it wasn't mine. Right. No matter what it is that I was doing, or unless my name was on the door, it wasn't something it is that I really had an impact on, or my impact was limited, I guess, to a certain degree. Right. And I felt like it is that I wanted to make a bigger dent. I felt like that there was something inside me that was meant to do more, contribute more. And if I wasn't in those leadership conversations, or if my name wasn't on the door, or it wasn't my building, I wasn't going to be able to have the degree of impact that I, for some reason, thought that I should. Right. And so you have to go through those things. It is. And those experiences formulate your DNA as an entrepreneur or as a business owner that allow you to kind of create and cast forward what's going to happen to you. But you don't become that without going through that. Right.
Right. Yeah. No, I totally agree. There's a certain process even to that madness. You may not realize it in the moment, but as you said, you just got to keep pushing it and things open up sooner or later. Right. But during that process, what was it that was keeping you up at night? Like, there's always, like, you know, as an entrepreneur, is it just a survival mode that, you know, or is it just taking care of the family at that point, or just making sure things fall in place? And what was it that was keeping you up at night?
You know, I think for me, it's the same things that keep me up now, right? Is that I think for me, my biggest motivation, you know, is really probably I'm scared to death to fail. Mm. You know, is that I remember when my first son was born. He was born and I was working for a company. He was born. We're in the hospital. And, you know, it's a time of celebration and all these other kinds of things. And a friend of mine called to say, hey, congratulations on Joshua being born and all these other kinds of things. And you get flowers and all this other kind of stuff from the company you're working with. And, okay, great. It's cool. And he had called and I'm talking to him and he's just, you know, he's congratulating you, but it's tempered. And I'm like, hey, buddy, what's going on? Oh, nothing. It's fine. Everything's good, man. Just wanted to wish you congratulations. Well, where are you? I'm at the office. Okay. Well, what the hell's going on? Nothing, man. We'll talk later. I'm proud of you and kiss Christine. What's going on? Hey, stop the crap. What's going on? And he goes, walked into the office this morning. The company's been sold. There's a box on everybody's desk, including yours. And everybody's been let go. And I'm like, what? And I'm in the hospital room,
right, yeah,
with my wife and new baby right behind me. And she's like, is everything okay? And you're like, yeah, it's great, honey. And I'm like, literally, the day it is that he was born, I found out it is that the company had been sold and everybody lost their job. And so that, for some reason, has been a chip in me, just something in me it is that's scared to death, that I hate when things are not in my control. And so the things that keep me up at night as a father and as a husband and as an entrepreneur and a business owner is the fear it is that of failing and not being able to take care of my family and not being able to do the things it is that I want to do. That's the stuff that scares the crap out of me.
Right.
And so I think everybody has those experiences some way or another, whether it's through a business or a job or relationship or anything it is that have a moment of definition to you, that stick with you, that you still remember the emotion of a year to 20 years later. And that's been something defining for me.
Yeah, no, I think that would definitely wake any person out, right? It just shakes you to the core that my survival, my family is dependent on me succeeding, whatever I end up doing next, because now I have nothing to fall back on. And when you kick that survival mode on, it's like, go, go, go from that point. And I
think, yeah, yeah, for sure.
No, I think that's a fascinating story, and especially the way you've told that. So now you have convinced someone to, you know, partner with you on JB Capital, and they're ready to do business with you. And it's been 2 decades since. And obviously, again, the path to forming JB Capital was not linear. I'm sure the past 2 decades haven't been linear at all. Otherwise,
that's for sure.
Right. So after you had, you know, you got the feeling, this is my baby, I have skin in this game. What are challenges for an entrepreneur while they're scaling or growing that business? Because, right, it's fascinating to start something of your own.
Sure.
And we more often than not do not realize what are the challenges that will come later on once things have been formed. And like, okay, now what? How do I grow? How do I get more business? So what was that inflection point for you after you seeded your business? Is like, how do I continue to grow? Like, what was your strategy? What was your decision framework?
So what's my decision framework and strategy for how I'm going to grow my business?
Yeah.
At the time it was just making sure it is that I was doing everything I could to give the best of myself to who it is that I was with. Right. And so one of the things that I have always been a believer of is that, if I decided tomorrow it is that, you know, I'm going to get out of the JB Capital business and I'm going to go start JB Capital sandwich shop or whatever, you know, whatever coffee shop, whatever my business is, right, is that the people that is that I've done business with over the last 20 years or so would come buy their sandwiches or their coffee from me. Because I've read somewhere and never forgot that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Right. And so the how it is that you treat people is long standing. And so for me, it was probably less of a strategy of again, because obviously, you know, historically strategy and, you know, having everything figured out has not been my way. Right. It's kind of, you know, run hard and fast. And when you hit something, turn, you know, right.
Strategy is not even a fair word to be used in your
right. And so it's been making sure it is that we are contributing the best of ourselves to other people. It is and making a dent for them and being honest and coming alongside them. And so now over the last 20 years, you know, we've come alongside, you know, roughly 100 entrepreneurs and small business owners. It is to kind of hold their hand and act as counselor, consigliere, guide, big brother, Sherpa, and help them navigate these capital conversations for what it is that they're doing, right? And so it's always been the people first. Right. The people first, then the business, then the economics for us. But the people first, right, has really always been how it's been. And so I don't know if that had become a strategy unconsciously. It certainly wasn't, you know, a strategy written down on paper. Okay, let's do the people, right? It's just, how do you think this should be done?
Right.
And that's kind of evolved and practiced over time.
Yeah. So, and there's another element of that on the trial and error, right? You try it and error and see what kind of fits, and you
realize
it's putting people first is good business. And I think, especially now when I look around the venture capital space or the startup ecosystem, there's a huge emphasis on just growing. Customer kind of takes the back and then fires, right? So when you were forming these relationships early on with your teams that you want to work with, advise, or like invest with, what were you looking for in the people that you wanted to work with?
Well, I mean, so a lot of that still holds true today, right? So from what it is that we were doing then to what it is that we're doing today. So the evolution of our business historically, so we spent, you know, 18, 19 years now in what it is that you would call kind of, you know, investment banking and capital markets advisory. So companies would hire us, it is, to act as their advisor or navigator, it is, to go find them most appropriate sources of capital to do X for their business, whatever they were trying to do, you know, and we had been 100% debt focused, right? So I don't do M&A, I don't do buy sell transactions. We'll help finance those transactions, but we're not negotiating those. We're just really, really, really good debt guys, but always from a broker or a banker standpoint historically. And so we had advised on and brokered nearly $1 billion in transactions in that period of time, which has been a great business. Over the last year, we have elected it is to move out of the middle and move into a principal position to where now we are doing off my balance sheet and our investors' balance sheet what historically we have been doing for everybody else, right? So we're definitely putting our money where our mouth is, right? And so the only difference in my business really is that now at the 2-yard line, I'm writing the check rather than another fund or family office or somebody else, right? So historically, and then even today, you know, as we're looking at companies and we're looking at, can we provide value? I mean, the first things it is, honestly, it is that we're looking at is we're looking at people, right? Is that, do can I get behind what Rohan is trying to do? Do I like your business? Do I like you? Right? Like if we're going to invest capital in what it is that you're doing, is this going to be an engagement and a relationship? It is that we want to spend the next 2 or 3 years, 4 years talking to you and spending time with you. Right. And then it's, what are you guys trying to do? You know, can I get behind your story? Is there value to what it is that you're trying to do? What do you need the money for and how much? And can I get behind the sources and uses of capital? It is, it says we need $2 or $5 or $8 million to do X, Y, Z. Can I get behind the uses and proceeds of that capital for the impact it's going to have on your business to move you from A to B? Can I get behind that? Does the company or the founder of that company, do they have a clear expectation of not only what this capital is going to cost, but how it's going to operate? Like, you know, what are you going to give up, whether it's an interest rate or me in your business once a month, you know, trying to help you move the needle, right, and make good decisions? What are your expectations of how this capital is going to work, right? And then number four, ultimately, or five, ultimately, the last thing is, do I feel like it is that we can help you? So even if I love your business and I think you're a great guy and I can get behind what it is that you're doing, am I going to be more than just a checkbook, right? Do I have connections either in our company and our repertoire to be able to help advance you from A to B? Because if I'm only money, if I'm only just coming in and writing a check, then really my values are not really any greater than the guy down the street or up the street the other way, right? And so we're looking at the complexities of those kinds of things to make sure, number one, I like who it is that I'm in business with. I can get behind their story and what it is that they're using the capital for. And we have a clear expectation and we're going to get along, but ultimately, can I help you? And if everything is there, but I can't move the needle for you, then I'd rather just be friends with you. Like, I'd rather just go to lunch and have a beer with you and help you go find somebody that's maybe a better partner for you than I am.
No, I totally agree. And I see this, quite a bit, being in the line of business in similar space as you. It's a two-way street, right? One side of the equation is the investor, the other is the entrepreneur or the founder or this startup business owner. It's like you should be able to add value to the business that you want to work with. Otherwise, at some point in time, it will sour or just go in different ways. And I'm sure you must have experienced some of your deals of some of your investments, whether it be your relationship perspective or capital side, is like, it didn't work out. Initially it was all great, right? It's all rosy, but at some point down the lane, the expectations stopped aligning and you weren't seeing necessarily eye to eye. Did you experience something like that? And what was your learning and how do you kind of handle that situation?
We're fortunate enough to say it is that in all of the time it is that we've been raising money and doing deals for people, we've never had an instance it is that somebody has hired us to go raise money or that we've committed to giving capital to something it is that didn't follow through. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, Joe hires us to go raise $5 million for his software business or his coffee cup business or whatever it is that we're doing. And 3 months later, we haven't raised the money and we say, hey, sorry, Joe, we gave it the old college try, right? Like, we've never had that happen, thankfully, right? Again, because of how we look at things up front, right? Like, if I'm not going to provide you value, I'd rather just be friends with you, right? Like, I'd rather find you somebody else. And so we've had 4 or 5 instances to where it is that we have raised money for a company it is, and they've elected not to take it. So they've either funded internally, they've put it on hold, they've decided to sell equity or sell the company instead, or one thing or another. We've had those kinds of cases. We've had cases to where it is that we've tried to raise money for a company, they rejected it. And then 60 days later, we found out they went behind our back and took it from them anyway and didn't tell us because they didn't want to pay. I mean, like you, this has been definitely a tremendous experience in I guess, understanding human behavior.
Right.
Like it's, everybody is okay and wants the fact of, yes, I would like $1 million or $5 million or $20 million or $100 grand or whatever it is for their business to go forward, until it's met, until it's okay. Here it is. Joe's willing to give you $100 grand or $10 million or whatever it is for your business. Here it is. Are you going to sign here? And then that's that kind of, you know, true up point to where it's okay. Grab the pen. Are you ready to sign this?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the pucker factor of, well, maybe I don't want the money that bad, or, you know, I never really liked guys named Joe, or, you know, or whatever it is. Right. And so it's, you have those experiences as well. And so a lot of this stuff comes back to just the character of the individuals that you do business with, right? You can have a tremendous company that's full of people it is that are leading it that don't necessarily have the character it is that you and I would want to do business with, then the company will never really go far. You can have a mediocre company, a mediocre idea that's run by exceptional people that has exceptional results because of the caliber of people that are there. And so I think the biggest learning experience there that we've had through the failures and ups and downs is that, it, you know, good people are going to do good things. Even when good people go through bad things, good people will still find a good result. There's still a degree of honesty and integrity and character and how it is that they're operating their business, which translate to everything, right? Like you, there's an old leadership book, it is by John Maxwell, great leadership author. And somebody had asked him the question and said, you know, can you tell me what it is that you think about business ethics? And John pauses and he said, there is no such thing as business ethics. There's just ethics, right? You either have them or you don't.
Very true.
Right?
Yeah. No, I think that's spot on. We try to create too many matrices and frameworks around certain things work only in business, certain things are non-business related. But the thing is, if you are genuinely a good person, it kind of, you create a culture that kind of aligns with it, and you keep serving with those ethics or moral compass or the code that you have established for yourself, and that's pretty visible. And that actually is a good segue to where I want to go is, so now we've, that was great in pre-COVID, you know, you can lean in and touch someone's shoulder and see if they're leaning back or not. Now what's happening is we are behind the screen, just you and I, like stuck in our homes. You know, so moving forward, like how do you think some of those business decision-making criteria would change, or how do you assess someone is a good fit for you to do business with you, you know, through virtual meetings? For say, and how do you think that's going to change or evolve post COVID?
You know, I think that's a great question. And I think, you know, candidly, all of us are figuring that out. Mm-hmm. Whether it's, you know, investors and credit guys like us, guys in the Valley, it is that are doing more VC work, everybody, right? I mean, for the near term, anyways, the impact of what's going on right now is causing us to rethink everything. Right. And so for us as individuals, maybe a silver lining, I guess, if you will, is that we are seeing better companies and being able to negotiate better deals under better terms on stuff it is that maybe we wouldn't have seen or wouldn't have come across my desk 6 months ago. And so that part of things, like, you know, is a unplanned silver lining. I think that a lot of the normal commercial banks are in a situation to where it is that they've been overloaded with PPP and they've got a Main Street program coming right behind it. And we may have another PPP of some kind or another. And then their existing clients it is that are there trying to draw down anything it is that's unused on credit facilities to try to bolster balance sheets with cash so they can, because we don't know if this is going to be another 3 months or 6 months or a year or more or whatever. And so let's hoard some cash, right? And so as a result of which, when there's a need for capital, they're having to go somewhere. And if they're not going to their banks, and private equity is continuing to raise billions for opportunistic credit funds, there's a hell of a lot more guys that need to borrow $5 million than $50 million. And so we're seeing really good opportunities there for us in how it is that we're underwriting, you know, it's, really now a second layer of diligence that comes in to where even once it is that we get past, you know, our normal structures of underwriting a business to try to, you know, find value and where we can add value and how the capital is going to work and the impact on the business and all those other kinds of things, then it's okay. Let's, you know, lay on COVID color glasses on this thing and see how the impact of everybody working from home and not traveling and healthcare changing and, you know, consumer behavior changing and these kinds of things, how is that affecting our investment and what are the additional risks if this new work from home COVID-ish environment is not 6 months, it's a year or it's 2 years, or what do we think now? Are we still excited about doing this? I think one of the things that set out to me that I heard, and this is maybe 60 days ago or so now, is I was listening to a Goldman podcast and David Solomon was on the podcast and he said, anybody it is that's in the credit space just became a bridge lender. Whether you think you are or you think you're not, you just became a bridge lender, because for the next 12 months, we're all just kind of figuring shit out, right? Like there is no hard line plan for the next 12 months. Like lenders cannot be in a situation to where it is, okay, you know, you said that you were going to be at this debt service coverage and now you're this. You said you were going to meet this over the quarter, but you didn't and now you're this. And so we're going to move you into default. Like, wrong move. Because everybody in the country is that. There's got to be a little softening and a little grace it is to your existing portfolio companies, because just like you and I are figuring this out, so are they, right? Like we're all in this mix together. And so it's really us providing a little grace it is to our portfolio companies. And thankfully we haven't had any, you know, real bumps to be concerned about. But it's understanding it is that we've got to layer something else in, and we still, honestly, it is as difficult as it is, we're still trying to find an in-person validation to a deal. Is that even when I'm looking at companies in the Pacific Northwest, I want to get to a point where I can do as much of it as I can, you know, over technology, over Zoom, over a conference call, over anything else it is. But there's some part of this, it is that for me, and maybe I'll get better at it, but for me, that you can't replace seeing somebody face to face. We're looking at about a $40 million specialty foods company. It is that all of their facilities are here in Washington for where it is that they manufacture and distribute. And as much as I like them on paper and as much as I like them on Zoom, there is something there that's different when you walk through a 100,000 square foot facility and you see how Willy Wonka makes the chocolate, you know, right? Mm-hmm. And so I don't know when that'll go away. Yeah. I don't know when you can walk me through with your GoPro, your manufacturing facility, and we say, okay, that's great, right? And I don't know when we're going to get there. And we may, I'm not there yet.
No, I think that totally makes sense. But I think it plays into your competitive landscape as well, like trial and error, experimentation as fast as you can while everyone's learning, right? So
totally.
You have an upper hand doing this.
I guess.
So I want to tie the two ends now, right? So you said right before you were starting JB Capital and at the time that you know, your company shut down and you were laid off, there was certain things that were keeping you up at night. Now, coming back to 2020, present day, what are some of the things that are keeping you up at night now?
Same things, man. It really is, right? Is that it's the same things. It's you know, I worry or think about my business and what it is that I'm doing. You know, I'm trying to solve the problems for my own business of where does the next, you know, $100 to $200 million come in for us when I can't fly to San Francisco or New York or London or LA to go meet with investors and families. And even if I'm willing to fly to New York, who the hell wants to go to Manhattan right now? Yeah. Or downtown LA or anywhere else? And even if you're there, nobody's going to take a meeting with you. And so how do you figure out the best, most prudent means of raising capital, either as an investor or as, you know, two guys that are starting their company when the value of in-person meetings has been put on pause. The value is still there, but nobody wants to meet, right? But that doesn't change the fact it is that you've still got to run your business, and so do I, and so do the 1,000 entrepreneurs that are listening to this, right? Is so I think early on, you know, we were all hoping that this was going to pass by. And so for, you know, the first 60 days of Zoom calls, everybody's like, if I have to sit on another Zoom web conference with my boss, I'm going to poke my eyeballs out, right? You know? And so now it's just, well, this is probably the new norm. So now it's normal and everybody's kind of figuring it out. The things right now that are keeping me up is that, you know, still I want to be able to do the things with my business that I feel like it is that we can. I feel like it is that right now we have the single best credit strategy in the country, not only for how it is that we deliver value to entrepreneurs, but same thing for our investors and limited partners. But I want to tell that story more. And I ultimately, you know, obviously part to your own gain, right? But part two, because I feel like the entrepreneurs actually deserve better than what they're getting in the community. And I feel like I'm uniquely qualified, since I've been this Rosetta Stone for 20 years between those who have and those who need. Like, I feel like I'm uniquely qualified to do that. And I want to deliver that to them. Yeah. And so that there is what frustrates me, or not frustrates me, but keeps me up and keeps me thinking. And, you know, my wife and I were just talking the other day, is that, you know, every entrepreneur has, you know, you have your shower thoughts, right? There's just that quiet time in the shower to where you get there or whatever it is. And then you're all of a sudden like, I've been in the shower 30 minutes, and you get out and you're like, I forgot to wash my hair or something, right? Like, you just, brain just goes all the time. Like, there's for entrepreneurs, there is a loud to the quiet.
Right?
And only the guys it is that are on the journey understand that. Right. You know, and so for me, and probably most entrepreneurs, the things that keep the most of your mind share are your wife and your kids and your business. And more often than not, it's probably your business. For most of you, if you're honest, it is that you spend more mental energy on than your wife and your kids and your family. It's totally twisted, right? But we all get it, right? I mean, you all get it.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I mean, the journey of an entrepreneur is never easy. Looking outside in, it seems like all fascinating and all, you know, full of champagne bottles popping every now and then, but it's sure. Hard. It's really hard. But I know, Jeremy, we are coming towards an end to our segment, but I have a penultimate question before we close this. Sure. Now, looking back at your journey so far, what is that one thing you'd want to change? And also to all the entrepreneurs who are out there trying to hustle and to create something that sustains and lasts long, what advice would you give them?
You know, the one thing it is that I think that I would change is that I think the biggest thing it is that I regret is not giving myself enough credit soon enough. I think oftentimes us as entrepreneurs see somebody it is who's created a level of success that you aspire to, whoever it is in your community or whoever you follow, whoever inspires you. We think it is, God, man, I love watching X, whoever it is, right? And I love what it is that they've done. I can't wait to do that. But sometimes it is the seeing the success is both inspiring and discouraging at the same time. It's inspiring because I want to do that. I want to see that. God, I can't wait, man. That's so awesome. But then it's discouraging because you feel so far from what it is that they've done in your current reality. And I think the thing it is that I didn't give, that I regret most, is that I didn't give myself enough credit early on to realize it is that those guys put their pants on just like me. They work hard just like me. They've just maybe given more of themselves for longer to get there, right? And so the things it is that I would tell folks it is to not discount yourself. There is nothing it is here in this world it is that was created for somebody else that wasn't created for you too. Right. And so that, I think, was a realization it is for me, even as much as we've done and the success it is we had, that took me a while to get to. So I would say that would be one for your entrepreneurs and the guys that are hustling and on the journey here. I would say one of the second things to do is, and it's an old saying, but it really is important, is when they talk about your net worth, or your network is your net worth. And it really comes down to the people it is that are in your association, it is, are invaluable. And so, you know, when I'm telling my son now, who's getting ready to go into his freshman year of college, is that these people it is that you're meeting, whether it's the guys in school, in your fraternity, your professors, the lecturers that come in, any of these things, these are a collection of assets and people that you're going to have for the next 25 or 35 or more years, right? And so your job for your network is to give them and contribute as much value to them as you can, because these are going to be the people it is that are going to maybe introduce you to your future employer, to your a future investment that you make, to a future spouse, to they may be your counselors, they may be your marriage counselor, they may be your investor, they may be whatever it is. And there is nothing more valuable than the people around you. And so there are people it is that I'm doing business with today that I met 20 years ago that I never would have thought to do business with. Right. And so that is just, that's of such critical importance that I would tell guys that are listening to this, is just to realize the value of these people around you.
Brilliant. I think, yeah, never to discount your network, and that essentially becomes your net worth. Right. And it also reminds me of one of Steve Jobs' quote, and I'm going to paraphrase it. It's the people who have changed the world were not much smarter than you and I are. Right. So right.
Love it.
Keep doing what you do and keep hustling the way you do. No, it was brilliant. This was a great session, Jeremy. I loved it.
I had so much fun. Thank you.
Yeah, no, it was all the honor was all mine having you here, discussing your life story, your business, and your advice. I'll take it to heart. And also hopefully people who are listening to this can learn a lot from this. Before we, part ways, where can all the lovely listeners reach out to you?
Oh, wonderful. Thanks for asking. So, it's Jeremy Hill or JB Capital on LinkedIn. Google jb-capital.com is our website. And then coming up here right around August 1st, we're going to be launching the Jeremy B. Hill Show, right? So I don't know if we'll be as smart and as good looking and as wonderful as Rohan, but we'll attempt. And so coming soon on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, we'll have the Jeremy B. Hill Show. It will be an exciting collection of stories. So happy to share that with you as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And everyone on the show listening to this, stay tuned for Jeremy's show as well. Thank you again, Jeremy, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Thank you, my friend. Great to share some time.
Absolutely.
Oh, wow. That was some fascinating conversation. I haven't had a guest who has such a thrilling ride throughout his career, with some amazing insights for people who are listening to this conversation and this podcast. And anyone who's trying to build their company, have their side hustle, or are on their path to raise any kind of capital, I think this story will definitely ignite some fire underneath. But as every good thing comes to an end, our today's episode has had its run. But I'll be more with more exciting conversations next week. Until then, namaste.